There was a time, not so long ago, when people in Britain's cities and suburbs woke in winter not to cockcrow or the beep of a mobile phone, but to the strident riddling with pokers of stoves, boilers and grates. The ash that fell from them was not soft and white like wood ash, but scraped grey clinker that had once been coal. Coal was king of the winter household. Its arrival each autumn was a ceremony, with the knobbly sacks hauled off the lorry and onto the shoulders of straining men with flat caps and dust-smeared cheeks. Into the cellar or garden bunker the coal poured with a roar and a tumbling soot cloud. Then the door was sealed again. Behind it, the coal could be imagined brooding, waiting, like a presence. This was a fuel both ancient and strange. Its smell was salty and slightly spicy, of the deep earth. It had come from beds laid down in the Carboniferous and the Permian periods, dug out by miners who toiled underground half naked. It was compacted of giant wetland ferns and towering unknown trees, pressed down so hard for so long that they became stone. Users of coal warmed themselves not with the logs sawn from any old regular tree, but by burning prehistoric forests that had been stalked by dinosaurs. Coal came in many grades, from proud, glossy, sharp-cut anthracite to poor brown lignite left for power stations. To burn any kind was very different from burning wood. Wood fires were spirited, flamey, and lively. Coal took time, slowly digesting its starter of kindling and balled-up newspaper, letting the gas and tar smoke off. Only when it had dried would it open its heart of heat, to reveal scarlet lakes of magma and outcrops of glowing ore. Robert Louis Stevenson saw armies there. Any child could imagine them in this war landscape, as the red mountains slowly subsided into plains of lava and ash. In other ways, a coal hearth was more peaceful. It did not spark unless the poker provoked it. Instead, it sent out small, blue, mysterious wisps to show it was alive. And it did not crackle or sing. Instead, it burned slowly, ruminatively, with occasional sighings and settlings, conducive to thought. Sherlock Holmes, in his favourite armchair at 221B Baker Street, would sit, quote, moodily at one side of the fireplace, cross-indexing his records of crime, unquote, reaching at times into the coal scuttle where he kept his cigars, while the shifting of coals tracked the transmutation of one puzzle into another. Holmes's era was close to peak coal in Britain. In 1913, between industrial and domestic use, the country burned 287 million tonnes of it, most of it from more than 1,300 deep mines. By then, every chimney in London, South Wales and the northern towns had been belching coal dust for decades. Coal made the weather, as Charles Dickens described, in the incomparable first chapter of Bleak House. Fog everywhere. Fog up the river, where it flows among green aits and meadows. Fog down the river, where it rolls defiled among the tiers of shipping and the waterside pollutions of a great and dirty city. Fog on the Essex marshes. Fog on the Kentish heights. Fog in the eyes and throats of Greenwich pensioners, wheezing by the firesides of their wards. Almost no coal was imported, for Britain had deposits so accessible that the invading Romans forged their weapons with it, merely pecking with picks at the surface, and so abundant that the country industrialised well before the rest of the world. Queen Elizabeth I was already greatly relieved and annoyed with the taste and smoke of sea coals. A tax on coal introduced in 1666 was lucrative enough to pay for two-thirds of Christopher Wren's elegant new London churches. In 1888, a hundredweight, that's £112 or 51 kilograms, of coal, which would last a family a week, cost 1 shilling and tuppence, less than the weekly bill for flour or fruit. But it involved a Faustian bargain. Burnt in quantity, as it will continue to be in America, China and India, it produced the cheap energy on which modern life depends. It also poisoned the air and disrupted the climate. The cheering warmth of individual hearths was balanced always by the inescapable pollution of thousands of them, just as the mellow sweetness of a minor song was filtered through deadly black dust.